Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of the Happy Recap Radio Show on this May 21st, 2017. EJ, I'm along with JB today to recap what's been going on in the world of the Mets over the past week. And we've seen the bad, we've seen the good, we've seen the bad. And much like today, we have seen the very ugly. That being said, I don't know how much more ugliness we will be seeing out of Mr. Tommy Malone after his performance today. It's what we've kind of been saying a lot over the past couple of weeks about this pitching staff. It comes down to it yet once again. They got to get healthy, and they got to get healthy real soon, JB.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess we start with today. Yep, we got you.
Okay.
I guess we start with today's game. I mean, it feels like we are a skipping record here, JB. It feels like every Sunday we're getting on here, and we're saying, well, they won 2 out of 3. But unfortunately, this situation that occurred on the Sunday part of the series is just completely soul-crushing. Today being just Tommy Malone getting his brains bashed in, another horrible performance by Hansel Robles, and a game where you did score some runs, and it was just nowhere near enough because you're getting shelled left and right. And it just seems like we're getting on here every Sunday night going, oh, well, we should be feeling good that they took 2 or 3, but whether it's injury news or whether it's because they just had a completely deflating loss, you just can't really feel great about taking 2 out of 3 from this series.
No, I mean, that's the thing. You know, with these fill-in pitchers, I mean, nobody expected Tommy Malone to come in and be Noah Syndergaard. I think if you did, you know, whatever you're taking is illegal, stop and seek help. But the reality of it is that the goal for these guys is to keep the team in the game. I think this team has proven it can score some runs, even with various different cavalcades of lineups. Even today's lineup managed to score 5 runs. 5 runs should be enough to win a ball game on most days. But when you give up a 5 spot before the first out is even made, and then you proceed to give up a few more the next inning, you literally give your team no chance whatsoever to win. Now, you know, the funny thing is, you know, you have all these different excuses. I mean, Sundays have been a real pain for the Mets, especially in the first inning. I was listening to Howie earlier, and he was something along the lines of the last 6 or 7 Sundays look like 4 runs, 5 runs, 1 run, 4 runs, 5 runs for the first inning of Met baseball, and that's against them. Those are not ways to win ball games. He mentioned, and I need to do some research on this, that this seems to be a little bit baseball-wide. But if it is, I think I have an explanation for why this is going so poorly right now on Sunday specifically when the Mets go out there and look utterly lethargic. It's a problem that we've talked about throughout baseball. What are there none of on Saturdays these days?
Day games.
Day games. Exactly.
Yep.
And I think that is compounding. And Sunday's always been that day where, you know, back in the day, that's when they popped the greenies, you know, and nowadays it's when they, you know, they're down in the Red Bulls and all of that type stuff to kind of get up for the game. But when you're playing, that's after playing a day game. Playing a night game is another story altogether. I did think it was funny. I saw a couple people heavily critical of Terry starting Kevin Plawecki today. It's like, yeah, because you want to start that 33-year-old catcher day after a night game. That's a way not to break him down. But overall, I mean, I can't complain about how the Mets played. Now, how the Mets pitched is another story. The highlight by far, obviously, is Paul Sewald, who continues to look fantastic out of that bullpen and seems to be the rock they've been looking for. The problem is he's surrounded by Silly Putty.
Yeah, and the question is, if you do go ahead and make the move and throw him into some type of a starting role, even if it's a brief period of time, you don't know if he would be able to maintain that success having to stretch out a bit. But, you know, it's interesting, going back to you talking about the remarkable being outscored on Sundays, the Twitter account Good Fundies actually tweeted out before the game, and I've now since updated it. On the first Sunday of this baseball season, the Mets beat the Marlins 5-2. They have now been outscored 63-24 on every Sunday since and have lost every one of those games. That is just an incredible number that for some odd reason, this day of the week is just not the Mets. I mean, they've angered some type of baseball gods apparently, because Sunday is starting to feel like a day of rest for them because they might as well not even go out there at this point. But you're right. Stewart is he's been looking good.
You said 60 – run that way. 63 to what?
24.
So that's, what, a 39-run differential?
Yep.
The Mets
that's
currently
you're
on
never,
the season –
you never win in ball games that way.
The Mets currently on the season have a negative 27 run differential. Which means if you put the rest of the week out there, they are a positive 12, which they'd be the only other positive next to the Nationals if you take Sundays out of it.
That is amazing. I'm going to tweet that out later because that really is an amazing factor. That you're right. Yeah, they would be positive, but they would definitely be probably right up there with the Nats in the division lead.
And as I pointed out to someone earlier today, if you look at the stats, since Adam Eaton went down against the Mets, was at like April 28th or so, I think, was their 27th, 28th in there, the Nationals are actually a below 500 team. They're a below 500
yes.
team without a closer. Sound familiar?
You know, it's amazing because if you look at it just statistically and you don't take the injuries into account, they have had a pretty nasty day, whereas the Mets have actually had – aside from the seven-game losing streak on the road, unfortunately, but up to that point, the Mets were actually the ones having a very good May in comparison in winning multiple series in a row. And then, of course, then they go to Milwaukee, and that pretty much felt like the wheels just falling completely off the bus at this point.
Yeah, it's the one thing I will say is I said this in 2015. I'm going to say this, albeit really early, May 21st in 2017. If the Mets are to make the playoffs this year by some miracle, and to point to miracles going into today's action, the Mets had the identical record that they did in 1969. So thanks to Greg Prince for that factoid. Not projecting that similar miracle, but it certainly shows that you can come back from this. But if the Mets are to make the playoffs, the road again is through the division, not the wild card.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, I agree with you in full there that I kind of feel like, and I hate admitting it, but I feel like you've got to track down these Nationals while they're hurting, and you've got to close the gap between them if you want to have any shot, because I definitely feel like I think Greg Prince tweeted it out the other day, like what the Mets would have to go from here on to get to 90 wins, and the number was just – it was foolish. To even assume 85 at this point would take a hero's effort. You basically have to get everybody back starting now and everybody performing at the top level, and I just don't see that happening. So you're right. I mean, the wild card will most likely go to a mid to high 80s team, possibly even low 90s, and they're really just functionally there's no way for the Mets to get to that number, I don't think.
I think it is entirely possible, and this is keeping in mind that right now DC has like the fourth most wins in baseball. But like I said, most of that is they are a 500 team in the month of May. They are 100%
yep,
a 500 team in the month of May. And like I said, if you count the last couple games of April, they're below 500 team since they lost Adam Eaton. So presuming they keep that up, presuming they don't pick up a closer at the deadline, et cetera, making a lot of presumptions here. I think it is entirely possible the 82-85 wins the National League East.
Yeah, I think you absolutely could be right, bearing in mind also that the Mets, they've got a ton of games left with the Nats. So, I mean, if they just keep pace with them and just win your games against them, I know that's no small feat to ask, but if you can start winning games against the Nats and closing that gap a little bit, I agree with you. I think if you tell me that 83 games would win this division this year, I can't say that I'm going to argue with you too much about that because I could definitely see that being the case.
And that's why my prediction right now on paper, barring injuries, and this applies, I mean, especially, it also keep an eye on Mr. Duda and how his performance is. The next series with the Nationals begins at home Thursday, June 15th, so just under three and a half weeks from now. My prediction is that's the major league debut of Ahmed Rosario.
I could see that. I also could see that definitely, hopefully seeing a second, possibly even a third start for Steven Matz back in the rotation,
yep.
for Seth Lugo back in the rotation. So you should hopefully, while you're not going in there with all your guns a-blazing, because, of course, you won't have Syndergaard, you will have a much more balanced. I don't think we're throwing a tying the tone out there against the Nats at that point in that series.
No, and that's the thing. And that's why it's like, you know, Sandy's very much on record about Ahmed Rosario and Dom Smith saying as soon as they can pitch, they can get called up. Well, what's the two things the Mets should have before June 15th? That's Steven Matz and Seth Lugo back in the
yep.
rotation, presumably healthy, presumably, with a couple starts under their belt at that point. That gives Sandy then the freedom to make those call-ups. If Duda is still stinking it up, I think he call up Dom Smith and see what he can do. I personally would call him up a little sooner, just because a couple days sooner, because I mean, to focal point, both of them in that scenario may not be fair. But I think that's when if not then, that is when that becomes a serious discussion. You know, Super 2 thing all aside, I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing both these guys. They're going to play for the Mets this year. They're going to have an impact this year. But at the end of the day, the Mets are still scoring runs. Now, you know, no thanks to Mr. Duda. And, you know, Mr. Reyes has been very much hot and cold. Although, I don't know about you, dude, but as a fan of the Mets throughout the obviously for decades, but I mean, you know, the glory teams of old, looking back, I felt like I was watching Jose Reyes 2006 yesterday.
Oh yeah. That's why it was such a bummer to hear that he was tweaked today and had to sit out today. Cause that was some vintage Jose creating chaos, multiple hits. He definitely looked like a shade of his old self. And, you know, I feel like we've seen that a couple times since he's returned to the Mets. And that's why I just don't get the people are killing Reyes. They're making it like Reyes hitting 190 is the reason this team is where it is. And yet these are the same people who just look past like three straight years of Duda hitting in 210 for the majority of the season. And nobody's killing him. Like, I don't get killing Jose Reyes. He has a skill set that the Mets desperately need. They don't have speed. And let's face it, with Cabrera out, you're going to need defense on the left-hand side, and that's something we've seen far too often when Wilmer Flores is in there, that you don't get a lot of them on the left side. I like Flores. I think he's a good utility player, but forcing him into an everyday defensive role is not in the Mets' best interest. So, like it or not, Mets fans, I mean, Jose Reyes is here for a little while. Now, of course, things could change as far as playing time goes once Rosario gets called up, but I'm not as high as you about the likelihood of him being here in June. I feel Sandy, in many ways, when the entire fan base basically decides they want something, I think Sandy likes to dig his heels in, defy them, and almost be like, I'll give it to you when I'm ready to give it to you. I think we've all seen that. I mean, they discussed sending Conforto to the minors in spring this year. So whereas everybody in the fandom was sitting here screaming, no, we want Michael Conforto. We want to see if he can bounce back. And he sure as heck has done that. So I'm not as high about seeing those guys here in June. I kind of had the All-Star festivities more targeted for them to maybe just prior or just after for them to get called up. But I do agree with you that they both will get called up eventually, and they both will play significant roles on the Mets' future the rest of the season. What I'm not so sure of is no matter how hard he struggles, and we've seen him go through some miserable stretches, and that's why I'm not convinced, no matter how hard he struggles, if Lucas Duda doesn't lose an ounce of playing time. I mean, we've seen in the past him go through stretches of 5 for 75 at the plate and not lose a second of playing time. So if Dom Smith isn't here, I'm not convinced entirely that they'd be willing to sit Duda down and let TJ Rivera take some days at first base. I just feel like Terry's got some weird type of kinship with Lucas Duda that he just won't ever. There have been so many times over the past few years that Lucas Duda absolutely should have been given multiple days off, not just the quick blow of one day, and it never happened. And there were viable options there, and it just never happened. And Lucas Duda just continued to go out there and stink it up until he has that 1 week of the month where he doesn't go out there and stink it up. It's just who he is, and we're seeing it with Jay Bruce now, too. That home run was really nice to see today because he'd been mired in such a slump. But we've known it from the beginning of the year that there are some streaky guys on this team, none more so than Duda. But given his history of not being sat down during a cold streak, I don't see it happening now. Unless, like you said, maybe Dom Smith is here. But I don't see it happening for a TJ Rivera, which really, that's a shame. Because I kind of feel like TJ Rivera, from a hitter's perspective, is the second best hitter on this team to Michael Conforto.
You know, one of the things that was said early on with the Mets was, and you know, of course, this is a scenario where Mr. Wright is not amongst the deceased, as it were, but that Jose Reyes's role was going to be with this team, that he would be the super sub, if you will, pretty much playing just about every day, alternating between second, shortstop, third, and possibly center field. When we do see Cabrera come back, and that should be here shortly, and you do see, you know, Cespedes come back, and that moves Conforto to center field, because Lord knows they're not going to sit Conforto when you're putting up all-star numbers. I'm sorry, you just don't. I know there's a few doomsday fans that believe that's what's going to happen, but Curtis Granderson is going to the bench, people. That is the reality of the situation, and I think it gives us a stronger bench. I actually think Curtis Granderson can still contribute to this team as a non-everyday player. The other guys, I'm not sure how much they contribute as a non-everyday player, but he's a guy I think could. All that to say is, I don't know, we still have a couple weeks before the trade deadline, EJ, and I've talked about this team is worth improving. That third base is probably the position you most easily can upgrade this team at, especially when you look at catcher and the fact that Rene Rivera is doing pretty well, which, you know, that could be a ticking time bomb, or it just could be, you know, it could be that he's found a new facet of his game at age 33. I think the latter is probably more likely, but I'm enjoying it nonetheless. I don't see what the problem is in making Jose Reyes that super sub here when Cabrera comes back and saying, well, Cabrera's going to need a couple of days off a week. Neil Walker clearly needs a day or two off a week. Conforto will probably need to move to left field once or twice a week to give Cespedes some time. Why not say, you know what, until the deadline, let's see what TJ Rivera has. Let's make him the everyday third baseman. Tell me if that's not a bad plan.
I am 100% on board with that. Now, despite him having a little bit of a dip over this past week, and let's face it, the whole team had a bit of a dip the past week, he has proven that no matter what you say about TJ Rivera, he is going to hit. The kid hits at every level that he's ever played at, and he's hit at the major league level. And I know that it's all about the slugging and OPS and all that, but it's damn nice to have a guy in the lineup who's hitting above 300, a guy you can consistently count on to move a man over if need be, a guy who will make contact when contact is needed, a sac fly, a base hit, something like that. I totally think that he could slot in as a great number two hitter for this team. Having Conforto and him, I mean, we saw it the other night that we opened up, base hit, home run, ding-a-ling, there we go. And we were off and running. I mean, I really think that he should be given an extended look. I feel like he's earned that. I feel like he kind of carried this team offensively into the wild card game last year. And I think that he's earned the right to get an extended look here, especially when, as you said, there really isn't a great option at third base for an everyday third baseman. Flores is certainly not that guy. Reyes, I guess he could be that guy, but I like Jose Reyes. I like what he brings to the table, but I see so much more upside in what TJ Rivera could do offensively than what Jose can do. And that's not taken away from Jose. I still want to see Jose in that lineup. Just let him play elsewhere. Like you said, when Cabrera needs a day at short, let him play there. Let him play at second when Walker needs a day. You can still get plenty of at-bats for Jose Reyes and have TJ Rivera play every day. And I totally think he's earned that right, and I think it's something that Terry really needs to do sooner rather than later.
You know, and the thing is, and this will probably grind some fans the wrong way when I make this comparison, but let's be honest, as far as getting a hit where a hit needs to happen, TJ Rivera reminds me a lot of a certain fellow who used to have at second base who moved on to D.C. He just happens to be a little bit better defensively. Okay, a lot better defensively.
You're absolutely right. He is exactly like Murph when he needed to get up there and get a smart at-bat. That's what TJ Rivera does. When you've got guys around him like Bruce and like Duda, when they are mired in these awful slumps, you need guys who can make contact and can make things happen on the bases. You can't always, we've said it how many times, you can't always rely on the solo home run to make things happen. And T.J. Rivera gives you the option to hopefully clutter up the base paths a little in case one of these guys do run into a fastball, and to have smart at-bats. And like you also said, regarding the Murph factor, he's much better defensively, too. The kid is good defensively. Thus far, I mean, I had heard that was the knock on him, and I don't get that. I think he plays a solid – he's not Gold Glover by any standards, but he plays a solid position no matter where you throw him out there. So I'm perfectly comfortable with him in the field.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of how I look at it. I mean, I'm looking for reasonable band-aids because, again, there were a couple fans passing some rumors today about Wright, and I put some veracity in them when I hear them. But I don't know if you saw any of the footage yesterday of Wright on the bench. He doesn't look like a happy camper. Things are not going well for him.
David looks defeated.
And that's, I tell you, as a Met fan, as a David Wright fan, that just kills me. But, I'm wondering, it is hard to not wonder if he's accepting what some of us Met fans have already come to accept about him. And at the very least, he is not going to play a game in 2017. At the very least. Now, 2018 and beyond, I mean, there's some debate, and, you know, that's up to the doctors and all to decide. I know Dr. Parekh, indicated he didn't think, we talked to Dr. Parekh, he's an expert. However, always worth noting, he has never personally examined David Wright. So, the reality of it is, though, the Mets have to be thinking about what to do at third base. There's not a third baseman on the market right now. There won't be till about the 10th of July. At that point, you have a 3-week window. You figure Cabrera will be back in a week to 10 days is what I'm hearing. Cespedes could be back by the weekend, Darnot by midweek, which you'll see Plawecki go down. It sounds like Rivera will remain the everyday catcher. Darnot is going to have to earn his playing time back, but you have a couple guys that a day off, you can absolutely, like we said, you can get the at bats for Jose Reyes. Do you put Flores at third? No, I don't think so. Do you keep up Reynolds? Definitely not. He's AAA for sure. But why not give T.J. Rivera a chance? I mean, it seems to be the most logical sense. I mean, it's not his best defensive position. But, the other thing is you get a little bit of an idea of what you got. Now, if you've got to go out this offseason and potentially get a permanent third baseman, a permanent catcher, because, again, even if Rene Rivera continues on this pace, he's going to be 34. The reality of it is that you probably need to look at a proper center field or two. And, because at this point, again, we talked about the idea of re-signing Bruce, but I'm not there yet. So I'm just imagining at this point you've got Conforto and Wright and an opening in center field. And I don't want to see Lagares in there as an everyday guy. So you figure you've got to go out there and look as well. You have a situation where you could see, is T.J. Rivera part of the solution? Or do we have to figure something out? Because if you figure out, hey, this guy can play every day, but he's defensively better at second base, which he is, then you can say, we don't need to spend $15 million a year on Neil Walker and replace him adequately. I am not encouraging the Mets to not spend money. Don't think, oh, my gosh, he's got cheap. It's about spending the money wisely. And they've got enough coming off the books to replace the talent. I think if this season has proved anything, I think you also need to go out there and get a veteran starter.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I agree with the big factor in giving Rivera that playing time is we've said it so many times in the past. What if you think there's a need in the offseason and it turns out you really don't have that need? That is money that can be allocated to absolute glaring holes. And you thought third base was going to be one. What if it isn't? How nice is that to now have that money available to go get some other guys? So I agree with you totally on center field. I think center field needs to be addressed in the offseason. Juan Lagares has kind of turned into the second coming of Angel Pagan for us. We thought he was going to be something, and he turned out to be something completely different. And that's a bummer because I had really high expectations of where Juan Lagares' career was going to go. And I'm fully in agreement about, at the very least, one veteran starter. I can sit here and argue with you that you need to find one that you can stash in AAA too, for scenarios like this, so you don't have an Adam Wilk or a Tommy Mattone having to throw important games for the Mets. And they definitely need to kind of replenish the system a little bit with the arms that they can go into. And again, I'm saying this on May 21st when we were sitting here in February kind of joking that, oh, they have such an abundance of starting pitching. And you see how fast that abundance of starting pitching can go to a depletion of pitching in Major League Baseball. We're seeing it around the league right now, and no more so than with the Mets.
I mean, I'm in agreement completely with you on pitching. I mean, the one area, again, it's just – it's so hard to stash a pitcher at AAA these days. They don't want it.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. And if it, I think we all noticed this week, Doug Fister, who had been a, you know, somebody the Mets had their eye on, signed with the Angels of all teams. And, you know, to get him ready, they sent him to Inland Empire A-ball in the California League.
Yeah.
He's going to be ready for a couple weeks. I mean, that's the thing, you know, and that's the thing that really grinds me. It's like, I want a guy that, you know, is at most 8 days out because he's off turn.
Yeah, I agree with
that's
that. Instead of a guy who has to come in and get in.
But nobody will sign those deals anymore.
Yeah, you're right. But at the very least, if you get a guy who you could stash in your bullpen as your long man. Again, that's no knock on the guys who are doing the job now because they're doing solid jobs. Sewell's been really good in that regard. And I'm hoping the one good thing that comes out of getting our brains beaten in from starting pitching perspective was the Selman looked very good in his two innings coming out of the pen. So hopefully he's going to gain back some of that confidence that he clearly was lacking in his starts earlier this year. And maybe he does become part of this rotation again at some point. I still need to see a couple more really solid outings out of him, out of that bullpen before I would people to encourage the Mets to put him in the rotation. But I definitely think he at least took steps in the right direction this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing, too, is, you know, you talk about stretching guys out. Worth pointing out that, you know, a Met reliever and good friend of the show, Josh Smoker, was sent down about 2 weeks ago when we had some roster shuffles. And he has pitched in two games down at Las Vegas since his send down, both as a starter, which he's not done since 2011, mind you. And my understanding, it's not so much to stretch him out as a potential starter. It's a lot of it's to work on his off-speed, you know, his change-up, off-speed type stuff, and to stretch him out, you know, for bullpen stints. But to give you an idea, at eight innings over his two starts, four innings apiece, he's given up one run for a 0.69 ERA, struck out eight, and walked two. He's given up four hits in eight innings.
Great numbers right there, and especially in that environment, even more so impressive.
So the one nice thing is Josh Smoker, who, you know, obviously we're fans of. I think when he finally gets his call up, which, let's be honest, with the way the bullpen looked today, could be as soon as Tuesday. He could be back in New York.
Yeah.
I think that's entirely possible. I love the idea that this is a guy that you know, you don't worry about when Terry inevitably puts him out there for that second inning of work.
Yeah, definitely not. As opposed to the guys who are going out there right now, and you're just praying when they're going out for the second inning, it doesn't get too bloody.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm listening to this game. I was in the car for the early part of the game, and you know, I'm hearing you know, Malone just absolutely implode up there on the mound, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, who can go multiple innings today? Selman went two yesterday, so you don't got that option. And obviously, you know, in the back of my mind, and then of course it's like, oh god, it's going to be Montero.
Yeah, Malone to Montero, just like they drew it up in the spring.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that was, you know, that's the formula for a championship right there. And I tell you, one of those things that I need to complain to XM. They've got, you know, pre-recorded liners that run during the games that you know, identify that you're listening to SiriusXM. They run them at the, you know, over the top of the hour legals, and they'll run them coming out of a break. And you know, some of them is like, hey, this is David Wright of the New York Mets, and you're listening to Mets Baseball on SiriusXM, or this is Sandy Alderson, and one of them is Mike Mad Dog Russo. And he comes on and says, the Mets have pitching, and anytime you've got pitching, a championship is within reach. I just want to throttle him through the radio.
Yeah, I get that. I get
because
that. Bad dog can be a little aggressive.
It's so salt in the wound at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, Tommy Malone's just given up 5 runs in 13 pitches, and you got Mad Dog saying that we've got the pitching to get to the promised land, and you're just feeling quite salty at that point.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's my touch screen in my car almost became a punch screen, which I just knew I couldn't afford to replace it, so I didn't.
Yeah, I get that completely. I guess, yeah, Mad Dog could definitely be an aggressive voice coming out of your stereo.
Oh, even on a normal thing. I mean, even normally.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. But, you know,
so
it's
going
to be interesting.
You're listening on radio, so you missed. Of course, the only reason I tuned back into this game late was because I knew that Gary and Keith would be getting a little bit punchy. And sure enough, to his credit, Keith has one of my favorite lines of the season thus far. He just blurts out, Rafael Santana just texted me to tell me the Mets are getting their butts kicked. There's just so much randomness there that I didn't even know where to begin breaking that down.
Well, when Rafael Santana tells you you suck, you know, I will say, you know, it's one of those things you talk about never meet your heroes. In '86, I went to a signing at a car dealership in Astoria, I think it was. And there was like 8 members of the New York Mets. It was in September, so you had a couple September call-ups and stuff. Or like Randy Myers was there, who, you know, obviously wasn't an 86 Met, so to speak, but he was up in September like Magadan. And you had a couple. Everybody was cool there, except Rafael Santana was the biggest douchebag in the room.
Really?
Yes. Now, don't get me wrong. There was no Doc. There was no Dwight. There was no Keith. There was no Lenny. Because let's face it, anytime Lenny's in the room, he's the biggest douche. But, it was funny. He just was just kind of taking the baseballs or whatever the kids wanted signed and handing them back without saying a word. And all the other players were chatty and talking. And, it was one of those things, and it was a big talking point. And you can see this on my Facebook, on my Twitter. That particular year, my face happened to be in the scorebook as a 10-year-old.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that, yep.
And so my parents were really big on getting that signed. We have a couple of them, you know, that are put away that are have some very special autographs, I'll put it that way. And so, of course, all the players were like, hey, that's you. I've never signed an autograph on a picture of the other person. And they all, you know, thought that was really cool. But Santana just kind of looked around to see if his own picture was there and just signed it and handed it back. It just was kind of like, I remember saying to my dad, he's not very nice.
Coming from the memorabilia world, I've encountered a few of those guys. Robbie Cano. And, it's definitely not a pleasant experience for anyone, for the guy signing, for the people getting stuff signed, or the people working at the signing. It's uncomfortable on all three fronts.
Oh, yeah. I went to a signing once back in the day, and it probably was 86 or 87, and the lone Met there was none other than Mr. Dykstra.
Oof.
3 hours late.
Of course. Of course.
3 hours
late.
And wearing sunglasses the whole time inside the stupid Modells, which tells me hungover.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Lenny, he was a douche then, but we accepted him as a douche because he was our douche. But now he's just an all-around, just outright, just a-hole.
You know, and it's funny. You know, he'll occasionally – he tries to – I think he's trying to steal a page out of Jim Brewer's book by posting videos after Met games. I don't know if you've noticed he's done that a little bit lately. I don't follow him.
Yeah, I don't follow
him. They wind up retweeted into my timeline, and I've watched maybe 30 seconds of one, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, Lenny's talking exactly what I'm thinking, and I'm thinking, one, he's looking at your tweets, that's why, and two, he could be completely right. I'm still not going to take him seriously because he's Lenny Dykstra.
Yeah, I forget who took him down. Oh man, I don't remember if it was Mike and Mike. Or it might have been actually Boomer and Carton. I forget. It's one of the New York talk shows that I don't listen to. But he called in last week because he had he wanted to criticize Terry Collins and call for Collins' firing. And first off, it was a morning radio show, and he sounded wasted. He was completely slurry. But just kind of, he was like real, like confrontational. He was trying to pick a fight. And it seems like that's kind of his MO now, is to go on radio shows and try to pick fights with the hosts. And it's just like, that's his entire existence. It was like picking a fight with, I forget which program it was, but he's picking a fight with the host. He's screaming for Terry Collins' head. He's saying what the Mets are doing wrong. And it's just like, it comes off just very odd, to say the least bit. But if you have SiriusXM, if you ever want to hear a great interview where someone gives it back to him, there's a guy, Jason Ellis, out in L.A., and Lenny went to his studio, so it was a face-to-face interview, and Ellis gave it right back to him. And it actually, at one point, as I'm listening to it, I'm like, oh, my God, this is about to turn into a legitimate physical fist fight, because I thought Ellis was going to knock Dykstra out. It was a nice little obviously, Lenny walks out claiming he's the victor, but anybody who listens to the interview, it was very nice to hear Lenny get put in his place.
Yeah, I'll have to track that down. I do occasionally listen to Jason Ellis on SiriusXM. I'd not heard that interview. I just hear him constantly kissing Howard Stern's ass.
Yeah, he does a lot of that. But if you go into the on-demand section of that channel, The Faction, they actually have a separate show called Jason Ellis Interviews. And it breaks down just the interview portions of some of the shows. And I'm pretty sure the Lenny one is in there. It's definitely worth.
I will make that a point to listen to on my way into work tomorrow.
Totally worth it. And Lenny gets taken down. And I never thought, as a Mets fan, I would enjoy hearing Lenny Dykstra get taken down and dressed down by another man. But I was basically the fly on the wall, and I was squealing with glee as I listened to it.
Sometimes it's just got to happen, man. It's just got to happen. But getting back to the nice guys, as it were, you know, when we're looking at the downside too, you know, Josh Smoker can come up. I think, like I said, I think you may see that this week, as soon as this week. The reality is there's still just not much help Las Vegas. You're just going to have to mix and match until you find some stuff. But if you can get somebody like Gesellman into the bullpen for any length of time, even Malone, I mean, if he could prove himself to be able to, you know, stretch out and be a 3-4-5 mop up guy, he could have value to this team. And you know, thankfully, Ramirez, I think Neil Ramirez, our latest pickup, looked much better today than he did yesterday.
Yes.
And you know, mind you, he'd had like a 21-day layoff between appearances. So it's one of those things that I think a few people were just kind of like, okay, ready to cut him, and I'm like, no, you got to give him a little bit more, guys. He hadn't pitched in weeks, and that's that's why people were complaining the other night when Montero wound up in the game. It was like, well, why not Ramirez? What happened to Ramirez? And it's like, that's why. That was why that didn't happen then. That's exactly why. You just got to ease these guys into these games. So it's I look at this entire situation, and I think Ken Rosenthal was asked about it yesterday. If the Mets are still positioned to be buyers at the deadline, he believes they are, and I believe they should. Now I say that on May 21st. Ask me again on June 15th, and then ask me again on July 15th. That opinion very well may change. But one question I want to ask you, EJ, one of the things that you have always said throughout the many years of our friendship, into the years of the forum, into the years of the podcast, is that you don't judge a team till Memorial Day.
Yep.
There's no show for Memorial Day weekend next week, of course. And I'll ask you again a bit about it afterwards, but where do you sit right now?
Because typically we're dealing with injuries around Memorial Day. We've already dealt with injuries with the Mets, but we know, I mean, it's sad to say, but usually they're season ending. So I kind of know what the team's going to look like, or at least very likely in the disabled list stint. So aside from Noah, though, yeah, we're banged up like heck, but we've got help on the horizon. So it's kind of weird, and I'm not hedging anything, but I really need to wait to Memorial Day simply because this is definitely, this week is a definite keep your head above water and possibly even maybe fatten up a little bit, because you're going against the Padres, who are god-awful, and then you're going against the Pirates, who are themselves four games under 500. So this could be a week where the Mets actually make a little movement on the Nats, hopefully. So if I had to go with my gut right now, I'd say yes, this is a very flawed team, and I don't see significant help anywhere coming back when it comes to the bullpen, which is a much bigger problem than I thought it was going to be. I mean, granted, losing your closer possibly for the season is always going to hurt a team, but hey, Washington's not crying any spilled tears for us losing our closer. So they're in that same scenario, and I think Addison Reed could be a good closer. So as I look at the team heading into this upcoming week, I'm still optimistic, but I think they're one major injury away from the starting pitching to kind of have to start maybe reassessing if they're buyers or sellers at the deadline. But as of right now, if it's me, I still consider them to be buyers. I still consider them to be divisional contenders. And I still think that when the gang gets back healthy, I still think they could have one of the deepest benches in the National League, and they'll still have a very good pitching staff. I just need to see this good pitching staff start to pitch good.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly it. I think I'm exactly in the same place as you are. And as I said to a couple people over the weekend, as we've talked about Addison Reed, now this will be my final thought for the week, is that in Addison Reed, you may have a flawed closer, but you still have the best closer in the National League East.
I totally agree with you, 100%. It remains to be seen what happens at the deadline with the teams in regarding how they're going to handle closing out games, but I totally agree that Reed would be the best of the four right now.
Yeah, you're going to need an eighth or ninth inning guy at the deadline if you're going to compete, but the good news is so do the other teams.
Yeah, we're all going to be fighting one another for whatever the best available that becomes available.
But David Robertson, I mean, that's pretty, you know, that's probably the big name you'll hear. It's like, if I'm the White Sox, I'm like, start rolling up the trucks of prospects.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. They probably will be able to command a king's ransom just from the NL East alone.
Yeah. And that's the sad note. As I mentioned before, of course, next weekend, Memorial Day weekend, we'll be taking the weekend off to enjoy with our families and certainly hold in remembrance those who have died and helping to gain us the freedom that we enjoy in this country. And we should be back in 2 weeks. In 2 or 3 weeks, we'll have our good friend Rich Catino join us. He'll, of course, talk State of the Mets. Pretty cool book he's got out now, EJ, Press Box Revolution, How Sports Reporting Has Changed Over the Past 30 Years. And this is a guy, he's been through it all. He has seen it all. I'm really excited about this book.
Yeah, that should be a very interesting interview, and I can't wait to actually diving into the book a little bit and reading his writing. He's always been a good writer, so look forward to getting him on the air with us.
Absolutely, and so we'll talk to everybody in 2 weeks, but until then, hope for some good wins, some positives, and maybe just once we can maybe just go ahead and sweep those Padres. Just once, maybe just once, just yeah, just once would be great. Until next time, in 2 weeks, let's go Mets!